At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
Lightplay, this is George G, and the time is right. Welcome to today's guest, strong and powerful Bob Gower. Bob, are you ready to do this?
I am. Let's do it.
All right, let's go. Bob is a cult survivor turned organizational designer. He is a leading voice in agile development, lean theory, and responsive organizational design. He's a two-time author. He's a speaker and advisor and a partner at The Ready. Bob, excited to have you on. Tell us a little bit about your personal life, some more about your work, and why you do what you do.
Yeah. So I'm an organization designer, which means that I care about helping organizations be more efficient, more effective, and helping their people be more engaged. You mentioned I was a cult survivor, and I think I got into this work partially because I've experienced a lot of, let's call it, abuse inside of organizations. And I want to create more pro-social organizations. So not only do I want to create organizations that make more money, but I want to create organizations that are a net positive for the world. So I care about things like sustainability and equity, and as well as efficiency and business performance.
So creating well-run organizations with the human beings that are hanging out there being as engaged as possible. Have we just described a cult to a degree?
Well, that's interesting. When you say as engaged as possible, I think that is where we begin to tip over into cults. So cults are, you know, they are characterized by extreme devotion. Also, usually there is some manipulative persuasion techniques going on. And then there is harm being caused to individuals either in the organization or outside of the organization. And so I like to contrast that extreme devotion with appropriate levels of engagement, right? So if I have a barista making my coffee, I want that barista to be engaged in that process, but it doesn't need to be a life and death situation. If I have someone operating on my heart, it is a little bit more of a life and death situation, but that person could be engaged because they're curious about the mechanics of the heart, or it could be that they lost somebody to heart disease at a young age, and now they're very motivated by the sort of social good of it. I don't really care necessarily why they're motivated by it, but I want them to be present, engaged, and working on the thing for me. But when we start to demand extreme devotion, that this has to be your life's purpose. If a coffee shop says the barista has to make coffee their life's purpose, then that could become a cult, right? You can make a cult out of almost anything, almost any kind of ideology.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm sure that there's plenty of organizations that, and maybe even plenty of cults that started off with a great mission or a great purpose, and either maybe on accident veered into the kind of the bad side of it.
Yeah, well, I mean, the what we always say is that people don't join cults, they join good things. They join things that do good for them. So certainly in my experience and in most people's experience, you don't get involved in an organization which is bad from the start. It always starts off as something that kind of good, and then it sort of morphs and changes over time. And I think any organization, especially one where you have a charismatic leader and even like a strong sense of purpose, they can develop sort of cult-like dynamics. We've seen this in Theranos. We've seen this, I think, in WeWork. We've seen this in Bernie Madoff. Even Steve Jobs, you could say, right? And Apple, you could say, too, it has some kind of like cultic dynamic. Sometimes it's good, you know, not to, it's a spectrum. So sometimes it veers into like the really harmful and dangerous. And sometimes it's just merely, you know, interesting. And so I try to not be too judgmental about these things and try to be more practical about them. But what my ultimate goal is, the organization needs to have a healthy value exchange, right? If I'm working for the organization, I need to be getting something out of it. If I'm making something for the organization, that needs to be delivering value to somebody else. And so when we have this sort of healthy value exchange, and unfortunately, a lot of organizations don't have that. And sometimes they are purpose-driven nonprofits. Sometimes they're religious institutions. Sometimes they are real estate institutions, right? Again, you can kind of make bad organizations, you can organize them around almost any kind of topic that you want to.
Healthy value exchange. That makes a lot of sense to me. Not everybody is going to feel like the job that they're doing is their life's purpose, but they can still feel like it's like it's not drudgery and they don't absolutely hate their existence. And then you can have some people who are going to feel like this is amazing. It's checking all those boxes, but it needs to strike that right rhythm or chord.
Yeah. Yeah. I really love that. I think there's, you know, I always, one of the things I rail against a lot is this idea that we call our workplaces families. And sometimes that comes from a good place. Like people just work there. They're like, hey, I work really hard with these people and they feel like family to me. I don't really worry about that too much. But sometimes we see bosses say, hey, we're like a family here, but, you know, we're going to fire you if times get tough, right? You know, like they may, it may even come from a good place, but it's often this kind of manipulation that is designed to make people put their workplace at the center of their lives. And for many people, they just don't want to do that, right? Many people, you know, you mentioned you have young kids at home, right? We have kids at home. We have other things going on in our lives, but our work still serves a purpose. And so I think the more clear we can be about what that value exchange is, about the transactional nature of that relationship, and honor the transactional nature of that relationship, as well as the interpersonal. Like it's a both and, it's not an either or. It's not like either, you know, it's just for money and I'm just here to check boxes, and nor is it, it's got to be my life's purpose. We can kind of have, hey, I get some meaning, I get some warmth, I enjoy the people I work with, and I clock out at 5 o'clock and I go home and I take care of my kids, right? So I think we can have those. And I think actually we're seeing Gen Z is asking for this more and more. So the next generation of workers is actually asking us to be a little more clear about the transaction that's being offered in the work relationship.
When you're looking at other cultures, my perception is that in Europe, this we're sort of just what you just talked about has been valued for a lot longer than it has been in the United States. And now we have the new generation coming up. Do you think that's a natural progression of things, or is it a pendulum that's swinging back and forth?
You know, maybe so. I have my wife has a sister who's much younger and therefore of a different generation. She doesn't like to talk at all about what she does for a living. You know, like she's like, oh, people in my generation, we just don't talk about that. And that does remind me of experiences I had in Europe as a young man where, you know, in America, for one of the first things we ask is, what do you do? Right. And in Europe, it was like, why do you care what I do? You know, like, and maybe it is, maybe there is sort of a sort of a cross-cultural thing. I also lived in Japan for many years where, you know, work was life. That was basically all people asked about. This was back in the mid 90s when the economy was still booming there quite a bit. And, you know, people worked very, very hard. They worked very hard to get the lifetime employment of the job. And then once they were in the lifetime employment of the job, it became their identity. And I like to think that that was due to the very difficult situation that Japan found itself in post-war. Had to rebuild and it needed everybody, all hands on deck. But if we're going to be living the more prosperous times, maybe give us a little more freedom, potentially. I don't know. It's just a hypothesis. But
yeah. Well, I think that sort of makes sense. But yeah. So as you go into an organization, they say, hey, Bob, we feel like we can probably, why do people normally call you in? Why am I guessing? I can just ask.
Yeah. So it's usually, you know, kind of the pieces I mentioned before, it always kind of rolls up into either some degree of efficiency. Like, are we using our, you know, and here I'm going to use sort of businessy words, but human capital in the most efficient way possible. Are we utilizing our people's time in a way that actually is delivering value? And a lot of that is efficiency based, right? It's just sort of, you know, doing as much as you can with as few resources as possible. There's also, I like to sort of separate that from effectiveness, because sometimes the most effective thing you can do is inefficient, you know? So I'm a writer. I spend a lot of my time writing. And one of the things I know is that if I get stuck writing, often the thing I need to do is go on a bike ride or take a walk or actually take my mind off of the thing for a while, even a week. I'll put projects on hold for a while. While they sort of gestate inside of me. that may look really inefficient on the surface, but it's the most effective way for me to get to the best product. And if you look at product development, sometimes as well, like to get the best product, you have to kind of do things that look really sort of inefficient at times. And then the third component is commitment or engagement, right? Like it's sort of like how people feel inside the organization. So we frequently get calls after particularly bad engagement surveys, you know, results come back and they're like, why is everybody thinking about quitting? And so people ask us about that. So either it's this sense that we're not doing enough with what we've got, you know, so we're not doing enough work, or that we may be doing the wrong work, right? Which is where the effectiveness piece comes in, or that we are not treating our people, or we're not building the kind of culture, the kind of community that attracts people and keeps people here, because, you know, losing people and then rehire, you know, like that's a quick treadmill to inefficiency, right? If you're always retraining people, like keeping people is much better usually for your bottom line than trying to find new people constantly. And because it takes so long for people to become, you know, performers inside of organizations. But all of this rolls up to organizational performance, essentially team performance and organizational performance.
That makes a lot of sense.
We know what you're thinking. I just want jeans that look great, feel great, and hold up. At Ariat, we've been doing some thinking too. We're thinking about fit that moves with you, no matter where the ride takes you. Durability that stands up to hard work, harder play, and comfort that never quits. And all this thinking, it's really just about more living. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat jeans at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
So how do you help organizations figure out what that sustainable, what stasis looks like? Because there's a lot of organizations that want growth every single year. It's like this infinity war, which I don't think is necessarily sustainable.
Yeah. Well, that's often driven by their funding, right? So if you're publicly traded or if you're venture funded, you're often on that treadmill from the get-go. And there's very, you know, that almost becomes a design constraint that we have to work inside of, because we're like, okay, you know, your funders want continuous growth. Let's figure out how to get there. And then you used an interesting word, which is stasis. And I think the way we think about it, we treat organizations, and this is sort of a core concept of ours, but it can be a little hard to grasp, but we think of them as complex adaptive systems, so we think of them less like an engine or a watch that you sort of tinker with and make efficient, and more like a forest or a garden and something that you nurture and grows over time. And so stasis is just not really a thing, right? These, you know, organizations are full of emotional people, and those people are often changing because you have some turnover in every organization. So organizations are sort of always shifting, always changing, always flowing. And so our approach is to create a series of experiments. And so we just start nudging the system different ways. What can we change? What can't we change? Sometimes you can't change a budgeting process, right? That's a big, big lift in a lot of organizations, but you can begin to change how we think about the budgeting process or how budgeting decisions get made. And then we can slowly work our way towards some of these bigger issues. We operate from a very lean mindset. We want to do a lot of small changes and then occasionally do some very, very big changes once we built up the organizational trust and knowledge and perspective so we can tackle those bigger changes. We are not going to come in. We do not usually come into organizations and say, we're going to restructure you all at once. That's usually a that way lies madness in my experience.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Small changes rather than great big changes.
Yeah.
How important is empathy and patience, if at all?
I would say they're essential. My most recent book is called Radical Alignment, and it's based on a process that my wife and I created, which is essentially about creating more empathy. It's a way to talk to each other. It's sort of a structured conversation you have before you do something important, like in a personal life, go on vacation or have a child or get married, or in business before you start a new project, start a new business, start a redesign of your organization, for instance. And the idea is that different people can do the same thing for different reasons, and those reasons can be equally valid, right? So I can go on vacation because I need rest and relaxation, and my wife can go on vacation because she needs excitement and adventure. And if we know that up front, we can design a vacation experience that serves both of those needs potentially, or we can figure out that we should be taking different vacations, which actually we sometimes do. And the same is true in business, right? That some people can be there for the paycheck, because that's where they are in life. They've got maybe young kids at home and they've already achieved a lot in their first few years of their career, and they're ready just to sort of focus on something else. And then some people can be there to prove themselves. They can be there because they're young and they're ambitious. And some people can be there because they want the company to grow and they're more strategic and they care more about the top line and the whole company and the whole sort of ecosystem. When we develop empathy for each other, we can begin to develop processes and tools and team habits and a team landscape that honors everybody as an individual and yet also allows us to merge together as a whole as needed. And so I would say empathy is a huge part of that. And again, I mentioned we treat organizations as complex systems, which means we're nudging them, we're nurturing them. So I'm not saying I'm not giving somebody a goal and saying you have to double your revenue, by next month. And then that, which leads to all kinds of dysfunction, these kinds of targets sometimes do. Instead, I'm saying what's working and what can we improve, how can we help what's working work even better? And what's not working and what can we stop doing? What should we stop doing? What should we start doing? And what should we continue doing is often one of the main questions we're asking at organizations we work with.
What can we stop doing? What can we start doing?
Stop, start, continue. Yeah. And often stop is some of the most impactful things we can do. We love to look at people's calendars a lot. And so sometimes we'll go in, we'll look at how much of your day is meetings? How valuable are these meetings? How expensive are these meetings? Because often you have a 40-person meeting and everybody, you start calculating the actual cost of that meeting. And so we'll sometimes just say, how about we cancel all your meetings for a month and see what happens? See what's essential, see what's not essential. If it's essential, we'll get strong signal that that was essential. If it was inessential, nothing might happen. And we'll be like, okay, we can safely cancel that status update meeting with 50 people in the room that happens, every week that pisses everybody off and costs a lot of money and doesn't deliver value to anybody. So stopping is often where we start, but sometimes we also need to start new things. We need to try new things. And sorry, I have a cat on my lap now. and sometimes we need to, double down on the stuff that is working. Like let's not, if it works, like if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Double down on that thing that is working. So those are the things that we're always kind of continually asking ourselves when we work with organizations.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. You mentioned, I think it was just casual comment that if you come in and say we need to double revenue in, a month, that's going to create some kind of dysfunction. How do you, is there a way you think about deadlines, or does it just really depend?
Yeah. So, deadlines can focus the mind. I think deadlines are valuable. Douglas Adams, one of my favorite writers, always said he loved deadlines. They make a wonderful whooshing sound as they fly past, and which has often been my experience as a writer. I do think it's important to focus, I'm an old agile guy. And so I focus on a 2-week sprint. What kind of value can we deliver in the next 2 weeks? And then we can also sort of test and see how we did. One of the ironies, though, in the sort of the measurement world, the lean world, that has really shown us is that when we make a measurement a target, it ceases to be useful as a measurement anymore because people start trying to game the system. Mm. I had a friend who was coaching a guy who was, this is early days of the web, but the guy was paid for, page views. And the only way that was measured at the time was how many times an image loaded on the page. And so my friend, the coach, who was rather unethical, I guess, he said, why don't we just cut each image in half? And so every single image becomes two images. And so now you're basically gaming the system. You're getting, even though it's only one visual image loading, it's measuring, it's you know, you're getting paid for two images loading at the same time because you've just done like a little fancy JPEG Photoshop witchery. And I think people do that kind of stuff all the time inside a business, right? As soon as you give them a target, they're like, how can I get this done in the easiest way possible? And it may or may not serve the original intent of that target goal, that measure.
Yeah. Yeah, that certainly makes sense. We need to factor human nature into this.
Yeah.
Well, Bob, thank you so much for coming on. Where can people learn more about you? How can they engage with you?
Yeah, if you go to bobgower.com, that's where you'll find my writing, my books, my speaking calendar, and all those things. It'll also direct you to The Ready, which is just theready.com. And that's the consulting company where I'm a partner. And that's where I do all of my sort of facilitation and consulting work. So if you're interested in my hiring me, go to The Ready. There's a ton of work there and a ton of other people there. And if you're interested in my reading, in my writing and my speaking, go to bobgower.com.
Excellent. Well, if you enjoyed this as much as I did, show Bob your appreciation and share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Go to bobgower.com. It's bobgower.com. And check out all things Bob Gower, his books, his writing, his speaking. And then also check out theready.com to find out the consulting opportunities for your company. Thanks again, Bob.
All right. Thank you, George.
And until next time, remember, do your part by doing your best.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.